All right. Good afternoon, everyone. We will get started. We apologize for a little bit of a delay, but we do now have a quorum. I want to welcome everybody to the August 17th CORE MPO TCC meeting. I can't do anything about the heat outside, but we'll see if we can't get things heated up in here. All right. First item of business today is the approval of the agenda. I will entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
So moved, Michelle Strickland, City of Savannah.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the agenda. Do I have a second?
Second in Deanna Brooks, Chatham County.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We will start here to my left. And if you would, please voice your concurrence or non-concurrence.
City of Olympic, yes.
GDOT, yes.
City of Savannah, yes.
Chatham, yes.
Pequot, Savannah, yes.
Ambry, Burke Center, Chatham Area Transit, yes.
Jim Aiello, Savannah Hilton Head International Airport, yes.
Okay, and Richmond Hill is yes. So we have accepted the agenda. Moving on to the action items today. Hope everybody's had the opportunity to review the minutes that are listed here, the April 19th CAC meeting minutes. Is there a motion to accept these minutes? Item one. Wait a minute, I got the wrong one? That didn't sound right. My apologies. I did pick that up at the podium, I promise you. Thank you for that catching. I was like, man, that doesn't sound right. That's just Sally having fun. All right, so let's try this again. This is the same action was the approval of the agenda. I apologize. This is the approval of the June 22nd, 2023 CORE MPO TCC meeting minutes. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes?
So moved, Michelle Strickland.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the minutes. Is there a second? Okay, we have a second. I will start this time from my right. If you would please give your voice your approval or disapproval.
Jim Aiello, Savannah Hilton Head International Airport, yes.
Ambry Burke Center, Chatham Area Transit, yes.
Kayla Brown, yes.
Deanna Brooks, yes.
Michelle Strickland, yes.
Ted Hicks, yes.
Okay. And Richmond Hill is a yes. So minutes for the June 22nd meeting have been accepted. We'll move into the other business. This is a call for plans and studies for the fiscal year 2025 UPWP development.
Okay. Good afternoon. Okay. It's time for us to start think about plans and studies to be included in the fiscal year 2025 Unified Planning Work Program, which is the staff budget. And we are going to start a development probably in September. So if you have any ideas, you can submit it to us by the end of September, so that we can include it in the UPWP. So this is for preparation, in preparation to apply for the discretionary highway planning funds. Because normally all the MPOs in Georgia receive the highway planning funds. And if we don't spend all of that money, we return that money to GDOT, or we don't encumber the money to GDOT. So because we are in the reimbursement process. And then GDOT just pulls all that money into one account. So all the Georgia MPOs can apply for those funds. So we actually did our current fleet plan development, we actually use the discretionary funds, and urban flooding model, we also use the discretionary funds. And we also applied for the discretionary PL funds on behalf of City of Savannah for the I-16X ramp removal, and also on behalf of Chatham County for the State Route 204 corridor study, US 17 corridor study, and the Preston Street. So those would be the ideas that you can think of. Some of those we did get the funds, some of those we didn't. But the thing is, we have to include all these plans and the studies, the ideas or concept, and including the concept and the cost estimate into the UPWP. And then when GDOT issues this call for project, and then we can submit the applications. So normally the GAMPO conference takes place in March and September. So we have two opportunities to apply for those funds. So if you have any ideas, just let me know by the end of September, and I will make sure to include that information in the UPWP, so we don't have to rush to amend the UPWP if we want to apply for some funds. Currently, we are thinking probably because our urban flooding model study is going to be wrapping up at the end of October. So, and you know that we are going to expand to Effingham County and Bryan County. The current urban flooding model only covers Chatham County, so we might do a phase two that can just expand. So that's one of the ideas that we plan to include. But if you have any more that you want to do, just let us know so that we can include it. Any questions?
Excuse me, I have one question. So this is for the current members' proposals, such as, and I'll give the example, Richmond Hill, versus Bryan County.
Okay.
Unincorporated submitting anything.
Fiscal year 2025, we're talking about fiscal year 2025 Unified Planning Work Program. That means fiscal year 2025 starts on July 1st, 2024.
Right.
By that time, the expanded Bryan County and FM County would already be in the MPO boundary. So, for example, if Bryan County wants to study a specific area related to the Hyundai plant, you might as well just do the proposal, and we can, so if we, the governor finally signs off on expanded boundary, that means we can probably, submit, the application probably in September, I would say next September.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, this really is more the Richmond Hill, Bryan County, and also Effingham County.
Yeah, should cover all of the extended boundary. So by the time that we adopt the fiscal year 2025 UPWP, that will be February. But I would expect that the governor probably signs off, I mean, provide the signature probably before we submit the application. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Hey, anything I can use, I will. So. Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Thank you, Lakota. Status reports, 2050 MPT.
I would just give a high-level update on the 2050 MTP update, and then the specific staff and consultant will give detailed presentations. So for the 2050 MTP update, several things were going on at the same time. The first thing, we're still working on the 2050 socioeconomic data development. Our intern, actually Dara, she went back to Urbana-Champaign because she's still working on her master's degree, but she's going to continue to work on this. And Edward is leading on this development. So we have been coordinating with the GDOT consultant. Hopefully, we can get the data by the end of August, but if not, probably early September. And the travel demand model, Dara and Asia completed the check for the Chatham County functional classification and number of lanes. That has been done. And I'm supposed to develop the networks for the third, fourth, and fifth network based on the tip, but I haven't got any chance to work on the tip yet. So, but that will be done. And Kuompio planning area boundary, as you know, the Kuompio board adopted the proposed boundary. So we actually sent the boundary file to GDOT so that the Office of Financial Management can start to work on the revenue projections within the boundary. because previously when they provided revenue boundaries, revenues, that's only for Chatham County and Richmond Hill. But now we're expanding our boundaries. So that means they need to give us like more accurate numbers. And then that also means that we can include projects in those extended areas as well. And the contributing plan and studies, the regional fleet plan is wrapping up and almost all of the deliverables are online. Except the last one, which is the summary of all the previous technical memos. And Asia is going to do the non-motorized transportation plan next. And then the urban flooding model study is going to be wrapping up in October as well. And the consultants, Kimberly Horn, will do the US 80 corridor study today, give a presentation. And Faye is over here to give a presentation on master transit plan. So fortunately, all of this we are talking about will be wrapping up or completed in terms of master transit plan. So they will all be completed before the 2050 plan. So that gave us a good recommendation list, because for the previous MTPs, we got so many projects. We actually have to move some of those to the not physically constrained vision plan. So this is the first time that we probably can add some projects in. So all these studies come up with the recommendations, and those would be for consideration. And we also have a new planner. Yeah, Genesis. And she's going to take the lead on the CMP update, congestion management process update. And this will be a major part of the 2050 MTP as well. And then Genesis, we're also working on the transit planning related issues. So currently she's working on applying for the funds, 5303, the transit planning funds. And resiliency planning, Anna, the new planner, besides being the project manager for the urban flooding model study, she's also going to probably manage the phase two if we get the money. And then she's also checking other resiliency related items like EVs or green infrastructure, something like that. And public engagement, we're still considering having a second round of public meeting. At first I thought it might be in September, but seems like based on the conference schedule, might be in October or November. But by that time, all those studies will be done, so we have some good presentation on the findings. And then also, Genesis has also obtained the cost estimating tool. So I did ask her to start to properly plug in some of the, maybe have a test. I know that US 80 corridor study have several recommendations, but they don't have, it's not in their scope to develop the cost estimates. So we want to use one of those project as a test run. And we probably will show that result probably at October meetings. And we will also start to draft the plans, because now we have the goals and objectives adopted. We have all these recommendations completed from all these plans. And then we also have the roadway inventory and everything already available to us through the freight plan. So we're able to plug in some information into the drafted document. So we don't want to wait until the last minute to send the drafted document to Federal Highway GDOT and FTA for review. So it's just as we finish one chapter, we will send them in chapters. So they don't have to review the big, big document at the last minute. So we are going to probably start to work on this. And the expected completion of the full draft document is probably March 2024. And after that, we will start the FEDS and the GDOT review. And then after that, we will have a 30-day public review. So that's when we also schedule our third round of public meetings. So here's the overall schedule. So we were a little bit probably behind on some of these tasks, but in the overall schedule, we should be able to finish it. Any questions?
Any questions, comments? A lot of activity coming up in the months of September and October. So stay tuned. Thank you. Moving on to the core MPO regional plan update.
Yeah, I'm going to just talk about this regional fleet plan. If you go to the fleet plan website, you will notice. So all of the deliverables The draft of deliverables are ready for your review, except the last one. The last one, the development of final report and documentation. Okay, great. So all of these, we are inviting your review and comments on all of these deliverables. Actually, we have Anna, who's the new planner, and has already, she's not satisfied with the resiliency section of it. We actually scheduled a meeting with the consultant. So they are going to boost up on this technical delivery. And Genesis has also been reviewing all these deliverables, and she has also provided some comments. But we also want all the TCC members and probably the public to review this and give us some input, and so that we can incorporate all of that information. So we basically task 8 would be the summary of the all the needs assessment, all the analysis and the recommendations. So as soon as all the other technical memos are finalized, then task 8 will be finalized as well. Any questions on this? Yes, this is the free plan website.
Okay.
Wakoda, when are comments due if we have any?
Huh?
When are comments due back to you if we have any?
The sooner the better. Yeah, I would say probably.
I like deadlines that way.
Maybe end of August. Would that be feasible?
Sure.
Yeah, because previously when we send out the emails to the stakeholder committees, the deadline was August 14th, but we didn't receive all the comments. So I did receive a bunch of comments from Anna, and from Genesis. We haven't received the comments from GDOT, I know, so, but we still want to accommodate all of the comments. So if you can send us that, so that the, because previously we tried to schedule a meeting in September, the last ad hoc committee meeting in September, so that way we can compile just to show these are the comments we receive, but we haven't received that many. Actually, Chatham County, Pam Bernard actually sent a bunch of those. Yeah, she sent at least 20 very detailed comments. Yeah. So yeah, the sooner the better. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Moving on to the urban flooding model study, August report.
Hi everyone, my name is Anna and I'm the project manager for the flood modeling tool study. Just some new information since June when I took over as project manager of this particular study. We've received the deliverable for the SWIM, the stormwater management model, which I'm going to do a little demo of so you can get a taste of it today. And so Dr. Santiago Collazo, who submitted this deliverable and was in charge of it, he's actually in the virtual meeting room. So if you have questions about the demo or if I do anything wrong, he can correct me and help answer those questions. The second part of this deliverable, the hydrographs, which are outcomes of the SWIM, are going to expected to be delivered at the end of the month, so August 31st. Task 2.2 to 4 are expected closer to October, so that'll include social vulnerability metrics, financial stewardship, and the project prioritization tool. The final deliverables will be submitted by October 31st, and final presentations of findings will be at our October meeting. All right. And then these deliverables were also on the website for the flood modeling tools study. So if you go to the study page, you can see right here under this first one. So it's an explanation, the actual model files themselves, and then a link to the US EPA website where you're going to download software to be able to view the models. All right, so I'm just going to go into a little quick overview of what the SWIM is. So it's from the EPA. And it's used for planning, analysis, and design related to stormwater runoff combined in sanitary sewers and other drainage systems. It was developed to help support local, state, and national stormwater management objectives to reduce runoff through infiltration and retention and help reduce discharges that cause impairment of water bodies. So SWIM has been used in thousands of sewer and stormwater studies throughout the world. And some applications specific to this one are going to be design and sizing of drainage systems, components for flood control, sizing of detention facilities and their appurtenances for flood control and water quality protection, potentially floodplain mapping of natural channel systems, and designing control strategies for minimizing any issues. So going to open this up. Great. All right. So once you download the SWIM or the software from EPA's website, it's free. It's open source. Then you would go to the website, download the files, or the MPO website and download the files. So this is what it looks like when you bring in one of the files that they've, or the models that they've created. And so this is an example of a, drainage basin. So there are six different drainage basins. And this is just one. And so while this is not a flood map, it can give an approximation of where flooding will occur. So its use is to see what the water flow will be, the depth on the manholes based on specific flood events. So it can tell us the capacity of a manhole, where it's likely to flood, and the area that will be expected to flood from overflow. The real focus is to show us about the infrastructure. And so for planning purposes, it can help us identify where our stormwater infrastructure needs are. So for this specific drainage basin, you can see here you've got little rain clouds, so rain gauges. This model includes 10 and 25-year storm events, so meaning like on average that rainfall event is going to happen once in 10 years. And that can be a typical return period engineers use to design a stormwater system, and they also have 25. So you can click on the different rain gauges to give you that information. There are outfall nodes or junctions. There are conduits and links and pipes, which are these lines here. And then the nodes, which will show like an outflow area, for example, to like the Savannah River. These hashed areas is the watershed where water will fall and go to the pipes or that surface runoff. And ultimately, those results can show four different combinations. So hydrographs that are a 10-year storm with sea level rise, 25-year storm with sea level rise, or a 10-year storm without sea level rise, and a 25-year storm without sea level rise. They also included land cover in this model, but it's in a developed area, so land cover is not really expected to change. So some of these ways that if you're a stormwater engineer, why is this useful to you? And this is just the model. They're coming out with the results in this next deliverable. But you can click on some of these things, and it's pretty cool because you can change the different elements in there. So but like you can see the type is tidal here if you want a different flow. So you can base it on these different aspects. Sorry. Some issues with the mouse. You can change the sea level rise or no sea level rise. And so you can try these different things out, and then the result is a hydrograph. And so let's see if it'll pull one up for this node. It'll give you different things. So for this node, it'll tell you about like the volume of water going through based on sea level rise and time. So there's a lot of cool different inputs. I did not make this model, so I'm trying to explain it the best I can, and I'm not a stormwater engineer. But hopefully it just illustrates that, you know, if you have a stormwater engineer, they can use this and use this model based on the different inputs that our consultants have provided. And more information is going to come out, but just a quick little peek. Yeah, so Felix, I don't know if you're on here, but if you have anything else to add, please feel free to unmute yourself. I can show you. This is the downtown area. So the like condensed, like historic downtown area. Right. So that they're going to do that for the this August deliverable, but this is just the model itself and the input. So more is coming, but I just wanted to show that a lot of data went into this. You can change data that goes into it. And it's software that's free and it's available and has been used around the world to help plan out stormwater infrastructure. So while I might not be the best person to show it, it is interactive and it is usable. And if you are an engineer, you're probably a little bit more attuned to some of these different things. Does anyone have any questions?
I have a question, yes. And this is probably more for the engineering. So if I input the model, does it show me where bottlenecks are or where there are potential risk for flooding greater than one area versus the other?
Felix, are you on?
He's not there. I mean.
Oh, you need to unmute if you're on.
Yes, can you repeat the question again, please? I'm here.
Can you repeat your question?
Well, I was asking the question, if this software, if I import a model into the SWIM program, am I able to, you know, change the parameters and then identify where there could potentially be a bottleneck or potential flooding higher in one area than the other?
Yes, as part of the hydrograph, which is the second deliverable, we're going to support that, or we're going to present to you that all the locations, right, of those junctions and manholes and so on. So that will help tell you where you have bottlenecks and places where you want to fix, right, potentially. And additionally, I talked with Anna about, if needed, we can also provide some extra documentation to tell you how to modify more than just the input, right? For example, right now, you can easily modify the rainfall scenario or the tidal scenario, so you can have a different simulation and a different result. It takes a bit of more effort to change other things in the model, like the land use, land cover, and things like that. But those can be written if requested. But yes, in theory, yes, with the model results, you can see where you have some bottlenecks.
Okay. Yeah, we actually have our flood management engineer. I want to make sure that he has access to this. And Marcus Sachs, engineering out of Richmond Hill, Georgia. So I will be talking with Marcus. So.
Yes, we're more than happy to. We're more than happy to connect with him again and to meet with him and with you. So,
yeah, because we actually just recently had a, of course, you know, significant rainfall. We probably had the 1 in 10 or 25 year rainfall, 7 inches in one day, 3 inches the following day. And let me tell you, my phone blew up.
Yeah, I can imagine how that could be stressful. But yes, yeah, we definitely, and again, Anna didn't mention it, but there is more that we can do, right? Again, there are other better tools that could really provide flood maps, not like the one that we're using here in this project due to budget limitations. But, you know, if the city and the county and you know, if you really want to step up, and there are more things that we can do that could really provide beneficial use for that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, and so on the screen, this is part of that deliverable. It's the drainage basins that the models are for. So we were looking at this blue one downtown. So if you're looking at where they've been able to get data from, and phase two would ideally be able to expand out.
Well, I know we previously had talked about changing the diameter of piping and stuff like that, larger reception areas, things like that. That was a discussion that we had a couple of months ago, I think actually, Anna, before you were here. So, all right. I don't want to make this my show. So, all right. Anybody else, any other questions, comments?
I had a comment question. Can layers like roads, bridges, and culverts be overlaid with this model?
Yes, we can open, as long as they're kind of like a shapefile product, then we can open it on the model. However, we can also go backwards and use the things that you saw on the model, and including the results, and open it in your typical geographical information systems, so that you have more power to do, like, and, you know, the model, the SWIM model is very limited on the GIS capability, so it's also good to go the other way if needed.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
And Felix, was that Felix?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you answering your questions. Okay, moving on. Non-motorized transportation plan update.
I'll be giving that presentation. Yes. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. So the Core MPO has been updating its non-motorized transportation plan, and I'll just be giving a quick status update on some of the work that we've been doing. So some of the recent activities have included collecting data, specifically really large data sets, to analyze the current bike and pedestrian conditions within the area. So some of that data includes bike and pedestrian volumes, origin and destination data, a crash hotspot analysis, and then also a level of comfort analysis. Additionally, we also had a steering committee meeting last week for more discussion and input. So I'll just jump right into some of the data that we've been getting and then also sort of the source of that data. So this is an image of one of the bike volume maps just for 2022. We have them for several years, but just for the sake of keeping this as short as possible, this one's just for 2022. And this is essentially trying to locate where people are biking the most. So the source of this data is actually Strava Metro, which is an organization that provides free bike and pedestrian information for MPOs and other transportation organizations. And so this is just a closer look so far of more so the Savannah downtown area. So the darker the color, the higher the volume of bike traffic. We also did a similar map for pedestrian volumes for the core MPO area. And then again, the darker the color, the higher the pedestrian volume. So the plan for using this data is to observe where volumes are the highest and then reinforce those areas to make them safer and easier to use, and then also observe where volumes are rather low and look into why those bike and pedestrian volumes are low. Additionally, while this large data set is helpful, it's not the only one we're using to make project and network recommendations. We are also using census and ACS data on vehicle availability and commute methods, public input so people can tell us what they need and where, in-person observation, and then also we still have to go through the data and identify factors that might skew some of the bike volume data, just because sometimes there might be like a bike event or maybe there's like a run that might be included in this data, and we want to make sure that's separated a little bit more from general travel and traffic. This is also a look at our origin and destination data. It details where bike and pedestrian trips are starting and ending. So this isn't a traditional origin and destination data map where you can see kind of a directionality between where trips are starting and ending. We're still trying to figure out how to present it in that way. But so this honeycomb for this honeycomb presentation, the rings are the destinations, and then the green color for the bike, for this bike map is the origin. So the darker the green, the more trips are starting there. The darker the ring, the more trips are ending. And then also similarly for pedestrian destinations. And this again is the 2022 map. We have more data from more years and on a wider area, but we just wanted to kind of zero in on this area just for the purposes of this presentation. And I'm happy to send more information if people would like to see more as well. We also have our crash hotspot analysis map. And this data includes data from crashes from 2013 to 2021. And so as you can see, there are a large, there's a large density of crashes within Savannah proper, specifically that downtown area. And then we also kind of see it almost similarly for the bike crash density. But then again, this is more of a high snapshot of the crash density. So we're still going to go in and look deeper and look at those specific intersections and streets where we're seeing the most crashes and then make recommendations based off of that data. We also did a level of comfort analysis. And so a level of comfort analysis refers to how comfortable the biking conditions are to the average person. It's rated on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the most comfortable and 5 being the least comfortable. And the parameters for this analysis originated from the Athens Emotion Plan using speed limits, functional classification, and bike lane designs as factors to determine the comfort of a bikeway. And so this is just a closer look into the methodology that is from the Athens Emotion Plan. So a level of comfort of one is a level of stress tolerable for most children. And then as you go through level of comfort 2, 3, 4, 5, eventually level of comfort 5 is it's not appropriate conditions for bike or pedestrian traffic at all. So this is the map after doing that level of comfort analysis. So the bike lanes in green are the easiest to use bike lanes, and a lot of those are concentrated in Savannah. And then the hardest to use bike lanes are in red, and a lot of those are concentrated outside of Savannah, except for a few. So with some modifications, such as barrier-protected bike lanes, some of the harder-to-use bike lanes could become easier to use. So some of these yellow bike lanes, which are like a medium difficulty, could become green just by protecting them with some type of barrier. So this is just a breakdown of the statistics of analyzing each bike lane. The majority of bikeways have an LOC of 1 or 2. And with a protected barrier, those LOC 3 bike lanes can become an LOC 2. Additionally, we will be reviewing some of the Strava Metro data in terms of bike and pedestrian volumes to see if they may be influenced by how comfortable it is to use those roads. And we want to figure out how do we deal with the LOC 4 and 5? What can make those safer? Oh, additionally, at the steering committee meeting, it was suggested to kind of reanalyze the level of comfort using a different set of criteria. So moving forward, we're going to be doing that as well. Some other observations that were made during this observation is that many of the bike lanes observed were inconsistent in size and design. So there were some bike lanes where it was wider, maybe it was painted green and it was obviously designated, but then maybe a mile down the road, it narrows, it doesn't look the same anymore, and it's hard to even tell that it's a bike lane. Additionally, due to a lack of signage or painted / physical designation, sometimes it was hard to tell where a bike lane was even located. Additionally, some of those intersections were really hard to navigate and score. Sometimes a really easy to use bike lane intersected with a really fast, high capacity road. So in those cases, it was hard to give it a specific score. So some of the next steps includes using the presented data after we're finished fully analyzing it to create a project list or add on to the project list that we've already been adding on to in this process. And then we want to present that project list to the community for input and to conduct public outreach. Additionally, it was hard to confirm some of those bike lanes, to confirm their existence or not. So we want to go back and review some of those unconfirmed bike lanes. And then we also want to start reviewing the sidewalk and crosswalk needs. So again, the adoption date for this plan is June 2024, and we want to have the project list specifically completed in February of 2024. Are there any questions?
Any questions?
Yeah, Aisha, I just had one or two quick ones. I know we had talked about the level of comfort analysis and kind of playing around with that.
Yeah.
But with that design guideline, your comment about how intersections, you know, it's hard to score the level of comfort because it'll change as soon as it gets to an intersection. Maybe for the design portion of the plan, we could have a chapter within it that focuses on intersection design.
Yeah.
It's been really common all across, you know, not only Chatham County, but, you know, any facilities really in Effingham or Bryan that the intersections aren't necessarily considered as highly as the rest of the on-street facility.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see that inclusion within there.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other comments?
And I would also add to, you know, kind of caveat on that. One of the things, because I am a bike riding person, marking and signage, because as you say, a lot of times you don't know that it's a bike lane or for whatever reason, there's a tremendous amount of debris. So I think that, you know, clear signage, if that hasn't been one of the topics that y'all have examined, in some of these bike lanes that are considered to be hazardous, make sure that we, you know, look at what is standard signage. And is it available? So my comment. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you, Aisha.
Mr. Chairman, Mrs. Diffie actually has another meeting, so she requested to move her agenda up.
Anybody have any objections to that? I don't think so. Thank you, Faye. Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry. I've got another meeting I've got to make after this one. So, and I know that presentation on USAID is likely to be involved. So thank y'all very much. How do I bring up the presentation? Just click on that. Right there. Yeah. It is, actually, we've got to make a couple of small changes.
The final report and also the executive summary.
There we go. All right. Yep, you all just sent the right thing. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you today. We are so proud of the work that has been completed on the Transit Master Plan. It was approved by our board last month. And we are now in the process of sort of transitioning from the big vision document, which this is, into working on what's called the COA TDP, the Comprehensive Operational Analysis Transit Development Plan, which is stops and shelters and routes and timing and frequency and all those sort of pieces and parts of it. We also recently completed a Title VI equity analysis that analyzed for all service modifications that have cumulatively occurred over the last several years. A lot of service mods that happened, of course, during COVID and so forth. So, but I want to take a moment to walk you through this and then answer any questions you have. And again, thank you again for permitting me to move up on the agenda. So the process that we went through was called Chatham Connects. It involved CAT, the CAT board, and partner agencies involved in setting goals, allocating funding, guiding spending, and then the COA TDP, which I just mentioned, which is a little bit shorter timeline, sort of 3 to 5 years, and really is about focused on service restoration. One thing I want to say here that I think is important not only for our short-term strategy but for our longer-term strategies is there's two really key pieces to what will be CAT's success in moving any of this forward. The first is workforce development, being able to hire the operators and the associated personnel to be able to deliver all this. But operators in particular, we all know that every transit system in the country has suffered with hiring and getting operators in place. We are very hopeful with the introduction of microtransit that we'll talk a little bit about and its lack of needing a CDL like we need for our regular fixed route buses, that some of that will complement expansion of service. But nonetheless, workforce development and hiring operators is going to be key. And the second piece, and I think this is actually the most important one because it drives everything, is a reliable local funding and an increase in local funding. So CAT has been operating. We operate with such great partnerships with the county, with the city, with other local jurisdictions, with other partner organizations at both the state and other local level, and certainly at the federal level. And you know, we all had an incredibly successful year last year with, through this year with competitive discretionary grants. Nonetheless, it will be really challenging, if not impossible, to move forward the master transit plan and to move forward the other work that we're doing to a successful place without a sort of answering the question as a big community, all of Chatham County, how do we want to fund CAT? I know we've got lots of different pieces and parts, and right now we're sort of a patchwork quilt of all of that. And we're grateful for all the support that we have. It's just going to be a necessary piece of rethinking that as we move forward. So this next talks about the process that we went through, a year-long process. We started back in fall of last year. Went through a lot of analysis in terms of understanding the needs, evaluating existing conditions, stakeholder groups. I think we had every kind of public engagement piece that you can imagine, whether it was stakeholder groups, focus groups, regular public meetings, virtual meetings, in-person meetings, surveys, you name it, we had all of it, as well as engaging with groups like this one, both the TCC and the MPO, that are so critical to how this is being considered for the metro area and our regional partners as well. So post-COVID CAT, the driver shortage is having a big impact on ridership. Got to have those operators in order to be able to provide the service, in order to be able to regain our ridership. Our ridership right now is somewhere between sort of 50 to 60% of pre-COVID levels. And that puts us roughly on par with a lot of our peers around the country. Some are doing better, some are doing worse. So we're sort of at that on par measure. There are 8 core bus routes that carry 80% of the riders. I know some of this stuff that you have heard in previous presentations. The fastest growing areas are outside of some of our service area. We know all of the economic opportunity that is happening all around us right now, especially with our neighbors in Bryan County and the other areas of supportive business that are growing up around the Hyundai Meta plant. Partners have been key to CAT success. Partners are always key to your success. I think I've mentioned in previous presentations, I've been doing this for a number of decades, and the communities that are most successful, the ones that are really moving forward, are those that understand the value of partnerships and how to partner. CAT's most successful services, those with some of our highest routes, are those that operate zero fare. And you know that what those are is the DOT shuttle, which, remember, serves primarily the downtown area. But this past year, for the first time ever, we expanded outside of the downtown core, and we now serve 2 West Side neighborhoods, Carver Village and Cloverdale. We also serve all the way up to Victory. So those are expansions of that service that we've put in place, and with a real eye towards stronger connectivity, but also getting people to and from jobs and the necessary services that they need to get to. In addition to that, we also have zero fare service with our ferries, our marine services, and as we are rolling out the new micro transit, and those things will actually go into operation likely around March, you're going to have 2 micro transit zones on the west side, and there will be that will operate regular fare type service, just like the rest of our service. You'll have 1 micro transit zone, East Savannah, that's really just sort of right there in the, if you know where CAT Central is, in our CAT neighborhood there, that will also be serving the tiny village where the veterans are. And that will be the prototype, and the demonstration pilot project there will be that one micro transit zone will be fare free. So it will be a limited and targeted expansion of that zero fare service. Operating costs are rising faster than revenues, and operating costs are the ones that we most need local funds to support. Those are not the ones you go get federal grants for and those kinds of things. Federal grants are mostly directed at capital needs. Historic underinvestment in capital, though, means that investments are needed. So just like all parts of our transportation system, some maintenance and those kinds of things have not been as paid as much attention to, and especially in transit, capital investments that were really sort of future thinking have been neglected for a bit. We've already talked about the driver shortages having a big impact on ridership and talked about where we are in comparison in our recovery from pre-COVID, pre-pandemic levels. Those 8 core bus routes that carry 80% of all the riders. The transition from fixed route to service to microtransit where it makes sense. So transit systems across the country are having to rethink. There was already a softening in transit systems and in transit system, I think, operations even before COVID. Certainly COVID changed a lot of things, including transit. But even before that, the growth in Uber and Lyft and on-demand ridership was already starting to, I think, be reflected in some softening of the ridership strength of some transit systems, particularly in places the size of ours. So the notion of how we want to invest, particularly in those 8 core fixed routes, we want to make them as strong as they can possibly be. But there may be some other places where we begin to transition a little bit away from that into a micro transit service, because that's going to be the best, the most efficient, the most successful way to provide that transit service. Small investments in passenger facilities can make a big difference. We hear this all the time, and I know you see it when you ride down the roads, and you see there may be a shelter. There may not be a shelter. There may be a bench. There may not be a bench. There may just be a lollipop sign. There may be some other kind of sign. There may be lighting. There may not be lighting. One of the things that we have just started, as a matter of fact, we have the kickoff tomorrow, is a comprehensive survey of every single bus passenger amenity that we have. There's 1,700 stops in Chatham County, and we will be doing surveys of all of them, a condition assessment of all of them, and we'll begin to prioritize how we bring those things up to standard and how we start to think about things like that are super shelters or mobility hubs within our system that also help support the operations of some of those strongest routes. But just know that we understand every passenger deserves to have a respectful, dignified, safe place to wait on their reliable trip that is coming from CAT. The fastest growing areas are outside of CAT service areas. Again, we've got a region, you know that from your participation here in this organization. The region is growing, and especially with the new Hyundai plant and all the spinoff industry from that, we've got a lot of demand that's growing all around us. I am pleased to say that we have been meeting with Hyundai staff regularly, and we have another meeting, I think, coming up next week, and we are starting to near some conclusions around what are the kinds of services that they need, how much of it do they need, where do they want them, when do they want them, and so forth. So CAT is standing ready to be a part of the solutions, and there will be lots of different tools in the toolkit that will need to be brought to bear: additional highway capacity, better signalization, more other kinds of transportation network improvements, and transit will be a part of that as well. Partnerships have created some of CAT's most successful services. Obviously, we all know about the Bells Ferry service and the Dock Shuttles, and again, those are very successful services that have been built on strong community partnerships. We're also working with employers and with the schools, community colleges, and universities to strengthen those partnerships and those services as well. So goals, priorities, and values. The Master Transit Plan goals, these were built upon the CAT Board of Directors strategic priorities that were set in our very first strategic planning meeting over a year ago, to ensure that we were looking at how can we expand service, how can we improve reliability and connections, the passenger experience, reducing travel time, and always, always with an eye towards equity. The community priorities, we heard loud and clear. A lot of places there is unreliable and infrequent service. We need to increase our transit service levels and improve those bus stops that I just mentioned a moment ago. We need to improve school transportation options. The schools are struggling just like we are with finding operators and getting kids to schools. And in addition to that, especially for some of our high school students, being able to take advantage of those opportunities at Savannah Tech, Savannah State, Georgia Southern, Armstrong, to be able to look at dual degree programs. We want to be sure we're a part of making sure that everybody has the opportunity to fully realize their potential and their dreams. Centering investments in equity, making sure that we are advancing everyone, and particularly those with the deepest needs within our community, and ensuring that we are prioritizing those communities that have been disproportionately burdened by current and past decisions in transportation. Prioritizing connection to services and destinations that help people, especially those in communities that may be disadvantaged, to access opportunity like education, jobs, healthcare, things that are essential to a healthy life. Evaluating programmatic strategies, so looking at each of the things that we're considering and saying, how does it increase access to jobs? How does it increase access to affordable and sustainable mobility options? And how do we increase our presence in the community in a way that we're ensuring that this is a long-term commitment that we are making to accomplishing and meeting those needs? So the investment framework has a short, medium, and long-term strategy. We have prioritized transit investment strategy for like the next 10 years or so, although the plan itself goes out to 2050. I would call those out years more aspirational and visionary, and that first 10 years very intentional in terms of as what we know now about both our needs and our opportunities, how are we going to meet those? And of course, this is a living document like all plans. So we will be aligning with the MPO and the MPO's transportation plan so that our updates coincide with the ones that are necessary overall, so that this can always be the transit element part of that. So short-term investments are ones that are funded and being funded. Midterm will be a little what we call opportunistic. We're going to be always aggressively looking at those grant opportunities and looking at them for best fit. We don't apply for everything. We just apply for the things that make sense. And again, that also goes back to the fact that you got to have local match in order to advance most of these grants. And then longer-term investments that require additional funding, that both capital and operating. How do we make sure that we're positioning well for that? The strategy is designed to achieve equitable outcomes, so looking at how fixed bus route and microtransit come together as sort of the real backbone or the fabric of the system, complemented, of course, with paratransit services that serve those that are seniors and differently abled within the community, making sure that we're focusing on getting people to jobs, to education, to healthcare, again, those essential services, and then the bus stop and facilities amenities programming. So short term, we're looking at expanded fixed route bus service. We're continuing the DOT shuttle, looking at portions of the DOT shuttle expansion that makes sense, and working directly with the city and others on that, bringing the bus routes back to a 30-minute service. A lot of our service right now is one-hour service. Truth of the matter is that just doesn't often meet the needs of the community, and getting to a 30-minute service window is really important. And then, of course, figuring out for some of our most, what will be our most used route, how do we even improve upon that? Starting again with weekdays and Saturdays, adding back in Sunday service. Of course, we got the SMART grant funds this year. Remember, that was one of those rare opportunities to get 100% funding. Again, that will go live in March. And then our performance on that, we hope will then make us highly competitive for a second round of that funding that will be focused on implementation for those that were funded in the first round. Investing in bus stops and passenger amenities, and then forming the partnerships. Now, one of the things that we know that Hyundai is very interested in is they're really interested in van pools, and they're very interested in commuter express. And so those are both of the primary service models that we are looking at with them. Midterm, continued investment in fixed routes and our frequent service corridors, Abercorn Waters, MLK, and Augusta. I should also back up for a minute and say, in the short term, one of the projects that we're working on with GDOT right now that we're really proud of is transit signal prioritization, a partnership with GDOT, the city of Savannah, and CAT on Abercorn and Waters, two of our highest demand routes. And that will not only improve the on-time performance of transit service in those corridors, it will also smooth overall traffic flow in those corridors. So it'll be a benefit to all. Operating by the midterm, by 2028 to 2030, beginning to operate most routes on a 30-minute all-day service, and again, being in the weekdays and weekends part, expanding microtransit, continuing investments in passenger amenities. So that midterm is really a continuation of all that good work, that foundational work that's been started in the short term, and looking at a commuter express service if we haven't started it earlier with some of the demands that are out there now. And then longer term, getting to the 15-minute corridors, looking at new bus service perhaps to the islands area, depending on whether the appetite and the desire for that has developed by then, a full network of microtransit zones. Again, remember, microtransit is the Uber and Lyft of transit. It operates the same way. There's an app. You call up the trip. You tell the trip where to pick you up and where you need to go within a zone. It can also connect you to a fixed route if you're making a longer trip. So the customization and the independence of going where you want to go, when you want to go, that's not necessarily a part of always of what has been traditional transit, is I think what really is going to make microtransit be so successful. And then again, enhanced commuter express bus routes as the economic prosperity that we are seeing in this region no doubt continues to grow. On the marine services, you can see the short, mid, and longer term spotlight goals for that. We have two new hybrid ferries that we'll be taking delivery of in the spring. We get pictures every Friday of their advancement, and they're actually starting to look like ferry vessels now. At first, it was just looking like a lot of metal all over the place. So we're excited to see them starting to really take shape. And we are looking to put a third in the queue behind that. That'll give us four vessels, the three that will be new hybrid ferries, and a fourth that is still running. We have one that still has about 10 years of life left on it. And so we'll be continuing to working with taking advantage of that, restoring the ferry service hours. We have a new ferry maintenance facility that is actually out to bid right now, along with a new dock on the west side right there at Plant Riverside, a dock extension that will there. We hope to have that bid awarded and have ground broken, if you will, on both of those projects before the end of the year. There you can see in the midterm, potential for ferry expansion. Again, you've also got a lot of growth. We're talking about all the growth that's occurring regionally, but there's a lot of growth occurring on Hutchison Island as well that would likely enjoy some of this and need some of this additional service. Microtransit, already talked a bit about that, so I won't read through and go through this one in as much detail. But again, we do think that this is a tool in the toolkit that is really going to enable us to become a modern transit system that really meets the needs of an area our size and with the complexity of our system. It's interesting because Savannah is a considered a bit of a smaller or mid-sized system, and I suppose that size of a city as well, but we live big. And so the demands, especially with the amount of just visitors, with the economic growth, with the growth in our community all around us, means that these kinds of investments are going to be important. Again, access to transit with a spotlight on equitable service. You can see how we are targeting for the population that's within a half a mile of transit service. And particularly focusing that on the communities that have had some of the least accessibility. The high school connections, which we also mentioned earlier, in the master transit plan, we worked to align a lot of our fixed route services with the high schools so that those fixed routes can serve to rather immediately help the high school students with some of their transportation needs and demands. College and universities, the same. We are actually working on a proposal right now that would do a semester-long proposal to just to support and give everybody a chance of any student in the county the chance to try CAT out, with the hope being that also provides a foundation for bringing back the UPass program and some of those kinds of things with the colleges and universities in particular. Achieving the vision over time, you can see how we've sort of got this bucketed out. Again, we're going to focus on fixing what we have first, and then focusing on those improvements that will be most deeply felt in the community immediately and provide that strongest connectivity, and then looking at those more visionary and aspirational pieces. CAT's on the right path. we did very well. I think you've recalled before that we've mentioned. So in the last sort of, I guess, about the past 14 months or a little longer, CAT has seen about $14 million in competitive discretionary funding versus the 5 years before that we had seen seven. So in just a little over a year, we were able to really be competitive in that space. There is a lot of money out there right now, and that's part of it. But part of it is putting forward great projects and doing it with the kinds of things in mind that make you an attractive partnership proposition. We are growing. And again, I'm going to go back to if CAT is going to be able to meet the mobility needs in the future, there's two key pieces, local funding and workforce development. Achieving the master plan, you can see again, these are some of these numbers might sound big, but it's, we also have, like I said, we are maybe a little bit smaller community, but we live big. We're going to need to double in size to achieve the master plan vision. That's one of the reasons why a regional transit system is also a part of the discussion piece in here. State and federal grants can help that, especially on the capital side, but more local and regional funding is needed. Now, this year, one place that we were also really successful was with GDOT and through the state with the Georgia Transit Trust Fund funds. We were able to secure funds both that were allocation-based funds, formula funds, as well as individual awards. And there's that discussion that will a new governance structure, a regional transit authority be needed? That's a conversation that the CAT board and community leadership, chairman of the Chatham County Commission and the mayors and so forth of the cities will be leading that discussion together with a community collaboration to have very open, very transparent conversations about what does that look like and how do we move forward over time. It's not right here, but it's out there and it's something we want to put on the radar screen. Again, short-term funding opportunities. You can see we've identified in the federal, state, local, and then project specific what are our short-term most important. This is sort of the roadmap for what are the things that we really need to move on now in the short term in order to achieve these visions. You see in the medium term, you start to see other pieces of those funding opportunities be turned on in an effort to continue to advance the plan. And then, of course, the same in the longer term funding opportunities. And, of course, there is no doubt that the federal landscape and even the state landscape may change over this period of time, and we're going to be constantly on top of that to make sure that we're taking advantage of it and delivering the very best transit system that we can for you in Chatham County and the region. So with that is all of my comments, and I'm glad to answer any questions you might have. I know all of you, I believe, in some fashion or another participated in this. Some of you served on stakeholders. Some of you commented through the MPO process. Some of you showed up for public meetings or open houses. And I want to give you my deepest thanks because this is your plan too. It's everyone's plan. And it means you're committed to the success of CAT and we're proud. Thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Any questions for Faye? Or I think that was a great presentation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so we will go back to the U.S. Highway 80 corridor study status update. Do we have anybody presenting?
Yes, good afternoon. This is Chris Marson-Gill. Rhodes Hunt is also on the call, and we will be jointly giving the update on the State Route 26 U.S. 80 corridor study. So if... Yeah, I was going to ask, do you intend for us to present from the PDF or would you like for us to take control and run the presentation?
Can you get him? We're working on giving you control.
Okay. Okay, I see it. Stand by just a second. All right. Can you see the title slide now?
I got you, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. Again, this is the update of the project status in which we will cover our study findings and alternatives that we will include as recommendations in our final study report. We have presented to this group before, and we don't intend to repeat a lot of information, so we hope to get to the recommendations quickly and then take any questions that you might have. So this is the same group that's presented to you in the past. Again, I'm Chris Marsingill. I'm the project manager. Rhodes Hunt is also joining us. He's the deputy project manager. And then Denise Grabowski, who a few of you know is not on the call today, I don't believe, but she has been helping us extensively with our stakeholder engagement on the project, and we'll talk a little more about the stakeholder engagement effort in this presentation. Really quick, we're going to recap our findings, cover some of the study recommendations, and talk with you about the next steps. So the study begins to the west at the Chatham County line and ends essentially at Burnside Boulevard to the east near I-516. So a very extensive range on the study. We've split it into six segments that represent different characteristics along the corridor in different typical sections, and that helps us to report on the individual sections. So those are displayed there. I'm not going to review all of those for you, but just quickly, just to give you a reminder of how extensive the study is, there's 472 unsignalized driveways along the corridor. There's 19 signalized intersections. We've studied a total of about 40 intersections along the corridor. And the point of this study is to develop recommendations that we can ultimately program as projects needed to improve and maintain acceptable levels of service across the limits of the corridor as development continues along the corridor. So with that, I'm going to ask Rhodes to unmute and continue the presentation.
All right. Can you hear me okay? Got me?
Yeah, I've got you, Rosa.
Great. All right. So I want to quickly review the traffic conditions in both the AM and PM peak hours. So first in the morning, there are three primary bottlenecks, those being the I-95 interchange.
Rose, your sound is weird.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to stop you for just a second. You're a little garbled there, Rhodes.
Yeah. Is that any better?
Not quite.
How about now? Is that any better?
That's better.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so, all right, three primary bottlenecks are the I-95 interchange, Dean Forest Road, and Chatham Parkway. So the first at I-95 in the morning queues often extend about half a mile on the eastbound direction to South Rogers Street, and they extend nearly to the I-95 main line on the southbound off-ramp. At Dean Forest, they extend about a mile to Pine Barren Road. And then finally at Chatham Parkway, they typically extend about a quarter mile past Quinney Lane. Go to the next one. So in PM, it's usually an inverse of the morning, and that the queuing tends to be in the westbound direction as folks are leaving downtown Savannah. So again, the three primary bottlenecks, again, the I-95 interchange where queues often extend past Pine Barrens, again, about a mile, and then similarly on the southbound off-ramp, nearly to the 95 main line. And then obviously at Dean Forest, we've got queuing extending almost to Griffin Avenue. For those of you who traveled before, you know this one pretty well. And then finally, again, at Chatham Parkway, seeing some queuing between Quinney Lane and Junction Avenue. All right, so we had a question at the SAT meeting a few weeks ago about the existing crash history along the corridor, so I wanted to quickly repeat some of what we shared back in December. So this map shows the severity of crashes reported along the corridor between 2017 and 2021. In those years, about 2,100 crashes were reported. Three of those, represented by the red dots, unfortunately resulted in fatalities. But generally, the severity of crashes along the corridor is relatively low. About 93% of all crashes were classified as property damage only. So again, the big trends is that there are a high frequency of crashes, but fortunately, most of them are relatively minor. And so some of the other maps that have been shown today, this is a heat map where the brighter or hotter colors represent areas where crashes tend to occur more frequently. So as you may imagine, they typically tend to occur at primary intersections or interchanges like the Pooler Parkway interchange, the I-95 interchange, and Pine Barren Road. And notably, the segment that Chris introduced between I-95 and Pine Barren has a crash rate that is 5 times higher than the statewide average. So again, that was a pretty key focus area for us as we began to evaluate potential improvements. So in summary, our existing conditions, we determined that access management strategies should be prioritized, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that means. Further capacity and safety at key intersections, again, like 95, like Pine Barren, like Dean Forest, should be investigated. And then although we haven't talked about it a lot yet, transit, pedestrian, and bicycle facilities should be addressed. For those of you who know the corridor, there are large stretches that don't have many of these types of facilities today. So again, that's a key focus area for us as well. So a quick summary of our stakeholder engagement activities. We presented many of these findings to you, the TCC, as well as the MPO Policy Board and our stakeholder advisory team back in December. We met with Faye and her team at CAT in May to go over many of the studies that she referenced in her presentation. This week, so just this past Tuesday, we held our public information open house, our PIOH, at Pooler City Hall. And I feel like that went very well. I think the public was generally very receptive to the study, and I think appreciates the efforts of this team, the core MPO, to conduct this study. Finally, we will wrap up our stakeholder piece the MPO Policy Board at their meeting next week. So let's get into some recommendations. So again, we have identified short-term and long-term recommendations. The short-term we're defining as between 0 and 5 years, and long-term is more than 5 years. So in total, we've identified about 30 improvement projects. So we're not going to go over all those today. Don't want to bore you, but so I'm going to try to cover the highlights quickly. So our primary first rank priority in the short term is to convert the existing I-95 interchange to a diverging diamond interchange, or DDI. Some other notable intersection improvements in the short term, we do recommend additional auxiliary turn lanes at Pine Barren and Dean Forest Road. And then pending some adjacent development, we do recommend signalizing the Bloomingdale Town Center driveway near Jimmy DeLoach Parkway. Some access control improvements. We are recommending a corridor signal or corridor wide signal retiming to help adjacent signals coordinate well with one another, as well as optimize signal phasing and split times. I mentioned Chatham Parkway is one of the bottlenecks today. We are recommending some improvements within the vicinity of that intersection, including a raised median between Coyne Lane and Junction Avenue. And we're encouraging the local jurisdictions to begin planning for a raised median throughout the 12-mile stretch and requiring new developments as they come online to implement innovative intersections. And what I mean by that are intersection types like right-in, right-out driveways or R-cuts, restricted crossing U-turns, both of which really help limit the amount of left turns that occur, which typically contribute to high crash rates. And then finally, a transit expansion strategy, building off what Faye had covered. As you know, most of this corridor is outside the transit district. So for potential improvements to be expanded, additional funding may need to be explored to help improve and expand service along State Route 26. All right, so moving to long-term, building off of the short-term recommendation, I-95, we do anticipate needing to increase the capacity at the interchange. In addition, we are recommending at Moore Avenue to the west for that to be signalized. And then notably as well, and you may recall from the State Route 307 corridor study, we are recommending a single point urban interchange, or SPUI, in which State Route 26 would be elevated up and over 307. And we have a graphic to share about that a little bit later on. For access control, We are recommending a raised median with bike and ped improvements throughout the corridor. And as we were looking to prioritize where and how to implement these, we focused on existing crash trends as well as for future forecasted traffic. So based on those two factors, the I-95 to Pine Barren Road segment ranked as the number one priority, followed by Pooler Parkway to I-95. And then the third would be from Chatham Parkway to Burnside Boulevard in Garden City. So continuing with long-term improvements, rather than boring you with all this text, I'll just say simply that these are in accordance with the CORMPO's non-motorized transportation plan. In that plan, they identified several pedestrian focus areas, such as downtown Bloomingdale, Old Town Pooler, and residential Garden City. And in those areas, they recommended a shared use path on both sides of US 80. So we have done that as well. And then any areas outside of those jurisdictions, we're recommending a shared use path on one side of US 80 and then a sidewalk on the other. And then building off the short term, again, a transit expansion, leveraging the findings of the current studies, as well as the expansion study that we recommended in the short term. So as we kind of bring these to life, this represents a raised median typical section. And the key here is today, US 80 tends to have a two-way left turn lane down the center. So this would be improved and widened to a 20-foot wide raised median, which would constitute a bit of widening on the outside, but not a ton. And then this typical section also shows the sidewalk on the left side, and then the shared use path on the right side, which corresponds to typically the south side of US 80. So in interest of time, I'm going to wrap up here. So I will share that we have developed concept layouts for the PIOH. All of those layouts are available on the CORMPO's website. So certainly encourage you to look there and download them. And if you have any specific areas of interest, we do have a couple of graphics shown here that represent all the major jurisdictions represented along the corridor. So anyone from Bloomingdale or any specific questions related to this graphic before we move to the next one? Okay.
No questions.
Okay. So real quick, again, this is just the DDI at I-95. Just wanted to show this to everybody, as this is arguably the most important area of the corridor. It's where the traffic volumes are highest, where crash rates are highest. So again, we're recommending a conversion to a DDI. This represents the long-term, i.e. the 2045 needs. So notably, we're showing four lanes in the westbound direction. And then on the southbound off-ramp, where we did notice some of that queuing discussed a little bit earlier, we're showing triple southbound lefts and dual southbound rights on that off-ramp. So again, those are some of the more notable components of this alternative. Are there any questions on this section? Yeah, no, lots going on here.
Okay. Not hearing any questions.
Okay, so again, moving quickly, this area represents kind of the eastern end of Pooler. A key distinct difference in this section is we are recommending widening US 80 to a six-lane section. So again, that would be three through lanes in both directions. So that would be one of the primary differences here, in addition to some extensive improvements at the Pine Barren intersection. Chris, I think we'll probably rock on to the next one. Yeah, so we've covered this one a lot already in previous meetings. And some of y'all may have seen this concept before. This is the proposed SPUI at Dean Forest Road, in which US 80 would be elevated over 307. And then connectivity between the two roads would be via four ramps that then join at a single intersection under the bridge. One of the benefits of this alternative is that it really allows for a tightening of the ramp spacing, such that it can help minimize adjacent wetland and right-of-way impacts. We talked a lot about this at the SAT meeting, so just want to, again, allow for any questions that may y'all may have.
None.
Okay. And then last one, we're almost there. So this is, again, the Chapman Parkway area in Garden City. Notably, we are recommending a raised median near Quinney Lane, an R-cut example at Kessler Avenue, and then some relatively minor improvements at Chatham Parkway, including some realignment to help with the existing intersection skew. So with that, that is all we have. We certainly thank you for your time and your input. Again, all of our meeting materials are on the website. We certainly encourage you to look at those. We are heading towards our final report by the end of September. So these recommendations are by no means final. So if you have any feedback or input for us, we'd love to hear from you. Our contact info is shown here on the screen. But with that, we certainly thank you for your time.
Okay, any comments, any questions? I'll reserve. I do have a question for you, but in the sake of time, I'll reserve and make that comment to you later.
So, Sounds good.
All right. Moving on, Jim needs to leave. We are at the 15:30 or 3:30 hour. Normally this is when we adjourn. Anyone that needs to leave, please feel free to do that. We will continue the meeting and try to wrap up as quickly as possible. Jim, you need to provide your report.
Thank you, Les. As you know, as a Richmond Hill native, I got to get home and get my daughter off the bus. So, just real quick, two quick projects going on. We have a bunch more coming into works, but security checkpoint, the steel is up, the decking's going on, the roof's going on. It's moving pretty good. So if you've gone through the airport, you've seen a lot of construction out there for the security checkpoint expansion. The other project going on, demo air cargo, constructing a taxi lane as we speak. That project should wrap up in October. So two major $6 and $22 million projects going on. But it's going pretty good now. So any questions before I?
No, I think the expansion out there at the airport's really, really going well. Every time I go by there, it seems to have exploded again.
It took a while to get out of the ground, but now that we're out of the ground, it is going well. So
yeah. Okay.
All right. I appreciate
any questions?
Everyone.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Okay. Back onto the agenda. There's the TIF development for 2024-2027.
Okay, the TIF development is behind the schedule because we were supposed to adopt the TIF in August, but at that time we didn't get updated revenue updates from GDOT, and also some of the CAT information wasn't available. But fortunately, both information has been sent to me. One disappointment was, I think the revenue didn't increase for the highway because of the funding swap. We thought that at least $1.42 million combined Y230 and Y301 funds will be, added to the revenue projections, but actually they were not. So the updated revenue projections for highway actually is less than previous, but I'm going to start probably develop the financial plan probably next week, and so hopefully get that done by the end of the August. And if I need to like have a virtual meeting with the TCC just to check the financial balance, I will probably set up a meeting because right now I was swamped by all the MOUs and everything, so it just didn't have time to work on the TIP development yet. But after next Wednesday's MPO board meeting is over, I can just go back and work on the TIP.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Item number 10, which is the speaking of MOUs and membership dues, restructuring bylaws.
Yeah. The reapportionment, as you remember that we had a workshop, and the MPO board adopted the boundary, the MPO expanded boundary in June. And then we had a workshop, actually last week, right? Yeah. So,
Monday.
Oh, this Monday?
Yeah, it was this Monday.
Okay.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. So we had a workshop on the dues structure. So we were proposing 70th percentile for the model. And then it's just like, we divide up by the population, county wide population. And so each county will have their percentage-wise, and then we calculate the modal share based on the 70th percentile or 65th percentile, and then we apply that, and so you have that number. Actually, that's just to remind me the number looks pretty small compared to the dues that they pay. That's because we will only use the UPWP number. We haven't added in the overhead yet. So, but what I would do, I would just go back and add overhead so that you can have like more realistic picture. So, and then we also had a meeting, on Wednesday with ECAD and CEC because we want to combine these two committees and so that they can have a more focused vision and then they can have some input or at least a quorum because right now they have been struggling with quorums for years. So, and then, if we can get everything done, we will have the MOUs and bylaws updated probably, in September and then have the adoption, in October. And after that, the local government will sign the MOUs, and then we will forward everything, to GDOT so that they can forward that to the governor. And, after the governor's signature and we get the approval from FHWA and we will operate under those new bylaws and the fee structure. But what I do want to show over here is that, I was working on the MOU. So just want to show you, you can see, the jurisdictions involved has been expanded. So you can see the Guyton, Pembroke, Bryan County have been included over here, Rincon. And also, this area includes all of Chatham County. I just changed the language, a portion of Epping coming south of 119 and the portion of Bryan County outside Fort Stewart. So all the changes to the current MOU is highlighted in this. And you can also see, cause we had a meeting with ECAD and CEC, as mentioned, we decided to have that committee change, combined committee change to transportation equity and perhaps still keep the public involvement. So they will have their focused agendas. They don't just go through the same agenda as the TCC, as the MPO board, and the staff has to present like four times. So they want to have their own focused agenda so that they can focus on certain things. Maybe the ADA issue on outside one building or maybe like transportation to the Hyundai site or something. So they really want to have like a focused mission. So I did have some information included over here. We are also going to have a bicycle and pedestrian and advisory committee, and their mission is to just constantly evaluate our non-motorized transportation plan and then select the project selection and then probably pursue the grant funding. And then make sure those projects included in the TIP for implementation and then keeping track of the implementation status as well. So I just added this language over here. So these would be the changes. And, the TIP used to be adopted every year annually. So I changed that to at least every 4 years. Cause currently we update the TIP between every 3 to every 4 years. So I changed that language over there. And I did also include the what MPO does because we didn't include Title VI plan. Title VI equity planning, and that is a major federal focus. So I want to add that language over there says that we will still constantly maintain and update the Title VI plan and language assistance plan and environmental justice report, etc. And another thing that I do want to mention is the fee structure, because these would be signature pages. So Appendix A is the boundary, and Appendix B, we still need to get input from all the member agencies. So this is the language over here I have. So I did add in the based on UPWP and annual overhead cost. So that's what I will send you. So we still need information on this because for the three counties, we want each county to determine how to split their share of the total contribution. So basically Richmond Hill and Bryan County and Pembroke, you need to like have a meeting to decide to determine how to split that up based on population or I mean, whatever you have make the decisions on. And Chatham County currently pays 25% of the municipality's share. And the municipality pays 75%. So they need to have an internal meeting to decide whether the county still agrees to pay this or how this will impact. Because, I mean, that's also one of the reasons I think Chatham County Commission Chair is always the chair of the Compeer Board. So you don't have election. But if they're not paying 25%, so they only pay the unincorporated Chatham County, so they might lose that privilege. Effingham County, they need to determine their split, so they need to have internal meeting between Effingham County, Rincon, Guyton, and Springfield. So we are still waiting for that information over there. And the three modal authorities, we are still coordinating with Georgia Ports Authority, the richest agency who refused to pay. So we're still coordinating with them. So hopefully they will start to pay. But the language I add over here is like definitely they will pay. And Georgia Department of Transportation, I clarify the language over here because the GDOT already pays 10% of the transit section, the 53 match. So they don't pay the membership dues. And then the MPC, actually we provide the staff, so MPC doesn't pay. So I just made some clarification over here. So, this MOU is included in the agenda. So just, take a look at it and give us the feedback. And the bylaws, I'm still working on it. So hopefully, by the end of Monday, I will have a draft. Because just writing the bylaws for the Transportation Equity Committee might be a challenge. Kayla and Asia have been working on the bicycle and pedestrian. So that one is almost done. So we just need to do a little bit tweaking. And, but the new committee, that might be a little bit challenge. So I will try to make sure probably by the end of Monday I will have something. So, Wednesday, when we have the Cornfield Board meeting, hopefully we'll have both the MOU and the bylaws ready for review. That's it. Any questions?
When do you think you'll have the new
the fee structure? Fee
structure.
I could get it done tomorrow or during the weekend, probably.
Yeah, because we want to try to have our meeting next week is our
yeah. goal. I should be able to give that information to you by the end of the week or probably by the end of Monday.
Just let me know when you have it, and I'll go get it.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Continuing on, GDOT project status report update.
It's KDR.
Somebody online for that.
Hey. Okay. So for pre-construction status, we have 219. That's the spur at Talmadge Memorial Bridge. They're finalizing the scheduled developments. 15-151, the safety improvements on 204 from 21 Rio Road. There's a PCRF in progress to shift the schedule, and the next major milestone is PFPR. It's anticipated in September, and let will be shifted to FY26. 15-675, the safety improvements on I-16 Chatham Parkway moved to the April 24 let schedule. 4 and 5 are twin projects, 15704 and 15705, the bridge replacement over Back River and widening on State Route 404 spur from northeast of Savannah Harbor back to Back River. And the concept was approved 6-12, and now they're working on the PFPR. 6 and 7 is 17414 and 415 Bull River and Lazaretto. Are continuing toward PFPR, waiting on the environmental tech studies and working on the draft environmental doc. And 82023 is the roundabout at Hodgefield Road. And the second concept report was submitted and continuing toward PFPR. Construction reporting since this submittal date indicate consistent progress on all projects. And I just want to point out that 521855 received the NTP in July, and we're now awaiting a start date. And that is all. Any questions?
Okay, I do have a question regarding number 7. You still okay. shows the Let's Write a Creek still shows construction in 2023. We're already in 2024. Was it that?
Right. I'm sorry. I haven't switched it on the report. Thanks.
So what is the new year for construction?
24 and 5. No, they still have it. It just hasn't switched on. It hasn't switched on the PSR yet, so it's still in 23.
Calendar year 2023 or fiscal year? Fiscal year 2023 has already ended.
Mm-hmm. It's not changed on my report yet, the PSR. But I'll get with them. I'll get with planning and find out what's up with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, I do have a question. DOT, the last meeting, I request a update on the Highway 30 and Highway 21 project, where we are on the status. There's some details that they haven't finished on that project. So I would like to get an update on that.
Yes, sir. I did get an update on that, and they said it was just some paperwork that they had to get back to GDOT, but all the actual construction is finished.
Okay. Can you send me the information of the lady that is in charge? Because there's some, road dividers that they didn't put it back when they finished that I would like to have it back. Is by the CVS driveway. People are trying to cut in there, and it's a dangerous intersection right there.
Okay, thanks. I'll pass that along.
Which project are we talking? Is on the list?
It's not on the list.
Oh, it's not on the list. Okay.
It's actually the 21 Highway 30 improvement.
Oh, okay, 21 is okay. It's 30.
Any other comments, questions?
I think Port Wentworth has two projects, right? You have the Middle River and Savannah River bridge replacement.
Well, they, yes. And they have the bridge over,
those should,
yeah, I believe it's Hodgeville and okay. Highway 30 intersection, and the other one is 25 where the bridge is.
Yeah, okay. They're both showing 23% complete. So the summer 2025 would be the completion date. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? If not, we'll move on to the Chatham County Project Status Report. Ms. Pamela, is that you?
That's me.
Deanna.
Yes.
Deanna, I'm sorry.
So just going to point out some highlights. Girard Avenue improvements, we held our preliminary utility relocation meeting and our constructability review meetings in July. Green Island Road Trail, that one got NTP in July also for that contract. The SR 204 access study, currently working on the PFA for that project. Stay Route 25 and Present Street at Truman are still negotiating scope and fee. And then I added some of the local construction projects to this time around. So
I think it's not. Oh, okay.
It's section 3.
Which section? Oh, section 3.
Yeah. So the traffic signal at Johnny Mercer and Lyman Hall, hopefully that one will start soon. We're still waiting to get a signed contract back. Quaco Clearing, they had their notice to proceed on that one, so they're going ahead and getting the clearing done for the Quaco Widening Project that's coming up next year. And then Willow Lakes Road Improvement is a resurfacing in the for Willow Lakes in that subdivision.
Can I ask you a question about the Quaco Road Widening Project? I remember Bus Bay will be in the concept, right? Bus Bay was in the design.
What was in the design?
On Quaco Road, the Bus Bay, where the bus can stop. Yeah, because last time I was reading the news, and CAD was saying that they were going to eliminate one of the bus stops on Quaco Road. I thought Chatham County is going to like build the bus base on the Quaco Road. So, but they're eliminating the bus stops. So I just want to make sure that you have that in the concept.
I am not sure, but I can get an answer on that and let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that project can't be completed too soon. okay. City of Savannah Project Status Report.
The Delesitz Avenue widening from Waters Avenue to Skidaway Road. Storm drainage improvements and water and sewer relocations are underway. You may have noticed that we've had some closures. Right now it's between Waters and Cedar where they are relocating those utilities. And they will progress from west to east, so from Waters over towards Skidaway. The 516 at the Project Duran is the city's approved the updated right-of-way cost estimation still proposed for FY25, and the consultant is putting together a proposal for the updated environmental justice documents. The Truman Linear Trail Phase 2B was put out to bid but did not get any responses, and so it'll be rebid or reposted within the next 60 days. And Middle Ground Road from Montgomery Cross to Science Drive, we are working on responses to the GDOT comments from the draft RFP.
I did forward the email to GDOT asking whether the city can use the state contracting process for the Truman Linear Park Trail Phase 2B. So instead of doing the rebidding, so where does that go?
That would have gone, that should have gone to Christy Lawrence in CIP.
Okay. I think Ted was copied on that email, right?
I did see it. I didn't see the final reply from Vivian. I think she was researching that still.
Okay. Yeah, because the information I got is because of the Hyundai plant, so many of the local contractors would rather do contracts over there. So they neglect the municipality's small projects. So if we rebid, so in 60 days, we might still receive zero bids. So we try to decide whether we can use the like state contracting process. So we're still doing some research on that, seems like.
Thank you.
Faye's already, is there additional update on the Chatham area?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. So just going over our ITS and Clever Devices project, there's no status changes on that from our previous update. Just one vessel remains without the installation of this device system, and that's the Susie King Taylor ferry. Our diesel bus replacements, we have gotten the buses. The buses are now currently in service, so that project is complete. Going back to our maintenance facility and ferry dock project, we are still waiting on the completion of appraisals and the review of the appraisals, and the funds have been released, but our status right now is obligated on that. Also, we are in need of an FHWA flex letter. Currently, we're collecting the information to complete our application grants. All right, our hybrid electric ferry replacement. At the end of May, May 26th, a draft application was developed and sent over to GDOT. On the 23rd of June, we received the latest correspondence, that stated that GDOT was waiting for FTA to receive guidance for our application. Our electric bus replacement, we have grants for 4 EV buses. We're currently determining the matching funds for each grant before issuing for our board approval, so that's what we're waiting on. Our areas of persistent poverty grant, that study will conclude the potential to connect emerging job centers in areas with high levels of racial inequality or persistent poverty. Currently, we are beginning the application process for that. Our American Rescue Plan and Route Restoration Analysis, the project status on that is obligated as well. Funds were awarded in May of 2022 with 100% federal match. So our master transit plan, which we kind of got a preview of earlier, our board voted on that in July and it was adopted. We will be presenting that next week at the MPO meeting. And of course, our anticipated completion, like you heard from Ms. Fay, was completed in the summer of 2023.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Hearing none. Let me see. Last in South Carolina DOT projects update.
Yes, definitely. It's not, but she did send in the report. So they would have two projects. One is 995 Whitney. The other one is US 17 Whitney and the project status attached. Right. Yeah.
Everybody can take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And the TIPS funding tracking report, the eye chart.
Sally has been coordinating with all the project sponsors to get the updates. So when they send in the information, she updates this spreadsheet. So this is a way for us to make sure that no funding will lapse. Yeah, it's hard to read. Yeah,
it is.
So I saw her using a magnifying glass and a ruler, right? Yeah.
All right. Public comment. Is there anyone here from the public to have any comment? Excuse me. Hearing none, we'll go into the final sessions, which is the grant opportunities.
Okay. This is something new because Effingham County, actually county manager, asked their grant coordinator to just contact me and set up a meeting with me to go over some of the grant opportunities. And then I didn't realize that they actually review the Quorum PO as the resources for grants. So what I decided is it's just whenever we receive the grant opportunities, we will attach over here. So because many of those, many of these grant opportunities, our member agencies are actually eligible for those. So the MPO may not be eligible, but our member agencies might be eligible, especially under the current funding, transportation funding legislation, BIL or IIJA. There used to be like a one big legislation. Now they're dividing the money into so many different pieces. So Federal Highway Administration, Federal Transit Administration constantly throw out the NOFOs, notice funding opportunities. So whenever we receive that, we want to just send it to our member agencies. So just in case you are interested, there's one on the TOD. I think Kat might want to take a look at this, the pilot transit oriented development. So this might be useful to us. And the MPC will also look at this because we are the land use planning agency. And another one, there's another smart grant. Faye just told you that the CAT got the smart grant 100% and they're doing that microtransit. So this is another funding opportunity because this is like year after year. So let's throw out this. Take a look at this just in case you have some projects. And then I think there was another one. Yeah, this pathway, removing obstacles to housing. So this might be a funding opportunity for the municipalities. You have like housing authority or department for housing or affordable housing or something. So take a look at this. So you might be eligible. And then the other one, I was checking this, but Effingham County, the grant manager has told me that Effingham County is not eligible for this one because their like income level is higher because this is more geared towards low income areas or something. So, but just in case that you're interested, just take a look at this. So these would be the funding opportunities that currently we are aware of. But as we get more aware and we do send out the information to our member agencies.
And I appreciate this being added because there are a tremendous number of grant opportunities that, I mean, I get emails every day. It seems like there's money out there, but it takes a lot to get it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you qualify, sometimes you can't. You just, unfortunately, we don't have a grant writer in Richmond Hill. So, all right. Any other questions about grants or notices? A reminder of our next MPO TCC committee meeting, October 19th, that's 2 p.m. I would encourage you to be here. I would encourage all the TCC members to be here. There's a lot of activities, a lot of approvals that will be going forward to the MPO at that time. So I would like to have as many people participate and in the approval process. So. Any comments last minute? I appreciate everyone for sticking with us. extra 28, 29 minutes run over, but I think it was well worth it. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of good presentations, a lot of good feedback. So thank you very much. And to our new staff members, welcome. And to our existing staff members, thank you for all of your hard work. So, and if there's nothing else, I have a motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Motion to adjourn. Second.
Seconded.
I don't think we need to vote. Thank you.